What's up, everyone? Welcome to the 498th episode of the Pokemon Podcast. It's super effective. I'm your host, SBJ, and with me today is Will.
I wish I could do a Yakov Smirnoff accent, but I can't. So all I can say is, Greg knows what's coming. In Unova, you catch monster in tall grass. In Hisui, monster in tall grass is you. Oh, let's go back to the 80s, kids.
It's not enough sleep.
In Mother Hisui, the Greg monster is you. Let's talk about this bad game. Come on.
Oh, God.
Oh, my gosh. You know, before we record these episodes, we don't actually talk about our feelings, so I don't actually know how Greg and Will feel about this game. Hey, here's what's going to happen. We did not do a mini-series for this game, mostly because we did not know how this game was going to be laid out. There will be a bonus episode or two later this week with some thoughts and feelings. Still not 100% sure what this is going to look like. We're recording this at a normal Sunday morning. I'm still doing a marathon on Twitch as we're recording this, and then we'll go from there. For this episode, if you're listening, if you tuned in right now before and you're like, I don't know if I should keep listening, we're going to only talk up to Cleaver, because I think there's more than enough to talk about.
Good, because that's as far as I've gotten.
You know, all story is on the table up to Cleaver. All mechanics on the table up to Cleaver. All Pokemon on the table up to Cleaver. You know, they do the thing where they show a bunch of new Pokemon in previews, and then you don't get any of them until very far into the game.
It's fine.
It's fine. It's okay, I guess.
Look, I have what I need out of the game right now.
We'll try to have somewhat of a structure for this episode. I would probably call this episode like a first impressions. I have played the game for about 20 hours over the last 50 some hours it's been out. I don't know, what's 24 plus times 3? It's been out for like 3 days.
36. Wait, no, 24 times 3 is 72. I'm sorry.
72, yeah.
72. But you haven't done the third yet.
Yeah, that's true. As of this recording, I'll have another 12 hours.
But you're not right now.
This is out.
Yeah. So as of right now, I've gotten about 20 hours in. I am only at the... So I guess it's not a spoiler in the sense of if you look at your trainer card, there are 5 spots for badges, a.k.a. that's where nobles go, and you figure that out when you beat Cleaver.
Yeah.
So there are 4 more nobles after Cleaver, unless the trainer card magically updates. So
I can't even get it to update my picture, so probably
yeah,
not.
So as of this recording, I have beat the second noble, which I will not spoil.
Oh, you're behind me, buddy.
I've been doing pretty much like one noble a day because it gives me an entire 12 hours to explore one area. So as of today, I'll be starting that third area. 5 nobles equals 5 areas. There's a lot to this game. I have a lot of positive thoughts. I have a couple negative thoughts. I guess we'll start with Game Freak listened to you, Greg. They're always listening to the show. These three handsome, very pretty hosts, they're very concerned about why we have a cell phone in the past.
But, oh, I didn't take it as Game Freak listening to Greg. I took it as Game Freak saying to Greg words that I cannot pronounce on this program.
Look, all right. As a JRPG fan, lifelong fan of JRPGs, I appreciate that within the first 3 minutes of this game, they said, let's take the JRPG nonsense dial and turn it up to 11. We are just going straight nonsense, and I am here for it.
Yes.
Within the first few minutes of that game, I'm like, yep, sold.
But also,
it's nonsense. And I'm living for the nonsense.
But the way they did it, though, too, like, I don't know if you guys have thought about it this way, but it's like everybody, I'm not going to get into the ridiculousness of why would I move to a place where I'm scared of everything. But everybody there is like, we don't know the whole Pokemon biz. And then you show up and you're like, I know the Pokemon biz.
I know the biz.
And it's like, why do you know the Pokemon biz? Oh, because you've been transported from a different world where Pokemon biz is a little more comfortable.
I will say, being further along the game, yeah, I am. Not, they just turned the nonsense up to great. 11.
There's so much I know we can't get night, into it, but there's so much I could talk about this
last
game.
Night, Britt heard me scream, "What is going on? Why? What?" Multiple times.
I do think that we are getting to a point, and I would say for me the turning point was Pokemon Masters, where it feels a little weird. We have no voice acting.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think I remember there's a huge debate in the Destiny community about how your main character never talks. And they, like, made the main character talk, and I was like, but why? Like, I don't think he needs to. And I still don't think the main character needs to talk, because I'm the main character. And I don't think our main character needs to talk. But at least in that opening scene where Arceus is, I don't know, maybe he likes Shakespeare or something, and he's talking very, like, the art thou shall
well, because that's like
get teleported
that
and wager big fees from my cell phone. Like, he is literally AT&T in this game.
Hey.
I mean, I think he's more of a Verizon, but sure.
But that scene.
Definitely not T-Mobile, they're bad.
I think that scene probably would have benefited the most from some voice of some sort. I mean, they made him talk. I think maybe because they made him talk in the movie.
I think that's a losing situation. Like, 99% of the voice actors they get are a bad choice. Mm-hmm.
Like, well, didn't people love voice acting in Fire Emblem? Wasn't that, like, really?
Yeah, but
voice. You're saying voice for a Pokemon.
Voice for a Pokemon, and in particular, given how not great it is in the movies, that is more fraught, I think, with danger in the games than just not having it. It enhances the experience maybe 2%.
Yeah. That's my thing too. Is like
that's not worth it.
I mean, like, but we know that the real problem is that you don't want to read any of the dialogue boxes, right. And you just want them to read to you.
Yeah.
Turn
on text to speech.
I think the thing I would want is the thing they do in Masters, where they're like, "Hi." Hey, okay, let's, like, I think that would actually be a good compromise instead of full voice acting at this point.
Turn that off in Masters, because it gets real annoying real quick.
Oh, I really like it in Masters.
Because the 14th time somebody said, hey, wow, cool, oh, shut up.
Not a big Ocarina of Time fan, are you?
Hey.
Listen.
Uh-huh. Well, no. Quiet. Off. Phone sound off. Shush. If you're not going to speak to me, don't. If all that comes out of you is a single word or I'm out.
I feel like there's a lot of dialogue in this game. Am I wrong on that? Or do
there is a lot of dialogue in this game. It's a story-driven game.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say there's more dialogue than any other Pokemon game.
Oh, I would say
there's more dialogue because there's a lot of side quests, and the side quests have a lot of story to them.
Some of them do. I mean, like the lady that's like, "Let me see all the Roselia." Like
hey, that's not before Cleaver.
Okay, there's a person that wants all of, I can't think. There's another person that wants all of a something.
There's a person that wants all of Cricketune.
Cricketune. Like, they don't say much. They're like, I want a full Pokedex of Cricketune, and then they come back, and they're like, they, like, read the Cricketune Pokedex entry, which is whatever, and then they're like, well, and then they run away. And they just vanish.
I mean, they have a bunch of dialogue reading that entry. Like, they all have a lot of dialogue. I don't think any of it's unnecessary, but as the side quests get more complicated, you get more dialogue, and you get more story, because they're filling in blanks, and I very much appreciate it, and it proves to me that Pokemon could easily be an MMO.
Well, we already have an MMO. It's called Pokemon Go.
They create a well-rounded.
It's not an MMO
world.
Massive multiplayer online game. It is an MMO.
I'm not getting into this argument. We're talking about Legends Arceus. Yeah, no, I mean, but like having that dialogue is what creates your understanding of the world right. that you're in and the characters. Like, I was gonna say, like, positive with negative. I love the fact that so many people in the town have names.
Yeah,
but then sometimes you go places and they don't have names. And I'm like, you didn't get that baby names book that you couldn't have given a few more people names?
There are times where they run out of names.
It's like Galaxy team member. Really? That guy couldn't have a name?
Yeah. Well.
But
everybody needs a red shirt.
I appreciate that they gave people names. And it's not just like supply corps member or you know, gardener guy.
The game is, in my opinion, pretty much tutorial mode until Cleaver. Like they continue to like hold your hand for things. Like at a certain point, sure, you can like run anywhere you want. But they're still teaching you things up to Cleaver. Even after Cleaver, they're like, here's what distortions are, and it's like, oh, I've done distortions already, but like the tutorial for distortions is like,
I haven't come across any distortions.
Oh, I've seen many of them.
Spoilers?
I don't think it's a spoiler because you can get distortions before Cleaver. I don't know if you have to do anything specifically. Like, I don't know if you need to be rank 2 or...
They happen according to star rank.
According to what?
Your stars.
Oh, is it a certain level?
It's a certain star level.
3 stars? I'm either 2 or 3 stars at this point.
Well, you'd have to be getting them soon. It'd have to be like three. Well, I've talked to people who said they've beaten the game and they're about 5 or 6 stars. I am 7 stars out of 10. And I
Dang.
At the second note because I'm just like if I see a new Pokemon, I'm catching it.
I'm at 5.
That's kind of, okay. Number one, I agree with you that it is tutorial, but light tutorial.
It's very right? light tutorial.
Because at any point you can wander off and it's like, I'm out here to catch and attack 1,000 Bidoof and I'm going to spend all day and you can do it.
Yeah.
There's
no
time limit. Go enjoy yourself. And I did that.
Well, you get that.
Like, there are far too many Bidoof in this world. I must remove
the tutorial
them.
Length depends on how willing you are to plow through to the first noble.
Yeah.
If you're just going to plow through and just be like, we're going to hit these things. I'm going to do no side quests. I am not going to leave the branching path. I'm going to stay on the one road that leads me straight to it. It is not long at all.
Right. Yeah. Like, you could probably get to Cleaver incredibly quickly, or like me, it took me 10 hours to get to Cleaver. My feelings of getting into that first area, I don't even know what it's called. The first wild
Obsidian
area?
Obsidian Fields.
Is the same feeling I had when I got to the wild area in Sword and Shield. It's just like, I want to explore all of this, because over here is different than over there. I don't need to get to the first gym. I'm good with what I'm good where. What is this pink laser? What is this red laser? What is this sandstorm? Like it was very much that same feeling. But I could see the opposite where people are like, "Oh, I don't want to explore this right now. I just want to get to the first."
Yeah,
I kind of feel the same way. I was like, "Oh, I want to run around. I want to see everything." And then I had two realizations. One, I was like, "This is too big." And everyone's going to complain I'm going way too slow because I will explore every nook and cranny and never get anywhere. And number two, I stumbled across a level 40 alpha yeah. Luxio and it made me cry.
Yeah.
I was like, what are you doing? What are you doing, buddy? Leave
me all alone.
I was like, no. I've got to make some more progress so this never happens again.
To back it up a little bit, the opening like tutorial is catch these 3 starter Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good job at like walk around this very mini wild area. And then catch these 3 Pokemon. And then there I do like how the characters are confused just as you are. And if you're the girl character, you have like the Alola shirt on. It's the luxury ball Alola shirt that you actually can buy and wear in Sun and Moon. And then I think the boy is wearing a shirt from X and Y that you can buy in the...
Yeah. But yeah.
So it's like really cool that they drop it down out of the sky. You can see their cell phone like flying next to them. They pick it up. It turns into the Arc phone.
Which? Why? Look, Arceus, just use my phone as it is. They aren't gonna. They don't know what an Arc phone is, much less what a cell phone is. You didn't need to jank up my $1,300 phone with your
Greg,
virus.
I know you're not as churchy as, say, someone like me has been. But look, anytime the religions, they gotta fancify it.
Did you guys notice that, like, he tells you the end of the game right away, right? He goes, yeah. If you want to find me, you need to complete the Pokédex.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I would count that as the end of the game. I would say that as an end of the game.
An end. Well, yeah. I would assume
it tells you the end goal, right? Like it says, the point of this game is to do this.
Right. Yeah. The marketing is complete Hisui's very first Pokédex. And his opening Shakespeare is, if art thou shall find me, if thou shall get one of every Pokemon.
You need to stop talking about Shakespeare because you do not know what you're talking about.
Number one. And number two, it's like, obviously Steve has never picked up a copy of the King James Bible,
never.
Which is written in that language.
Shakespearean?
Shakespearean isn't a language. It's old English.
That's not even old English.
It's not
That's
even
just
old
like
English. It's
Tudor
just...
version yeah. of English.
Do we want to talk about the town, or do we just want to jump into the obsidian fields?
Well, I do want to say something about the town. A couple of things. Number one, I found it a little frustrating when we first walk into the town, and the professor's like, I know you want to talk to everybody. Don't talk to anybody.
Don't talk to anybody.
Follow me. But then everything else is like, you need to talk to everybody.
Yeah.
The town is much bigger than first. It's like, when you first walk through, you're like, what? It's like one street and one street. And then you're like, oh, wait. No. Oh.
No, there's a couple of side streets.
But the thing that and maybe this is something I'm perceiving that isn't going to pan out later in the game. But to me, one of the first things I thought of when I walked into Jubilife was like, wow. There aren't any Pokemon anywhere. This town is empty of Pokemon.
Yeah.
And what I've noticed especially as I'm doing the side quests, it's like, oh, I am integrating Pokemon into the life of this town.
It's a very cool touch for this game.
So I like that because it's like my presence is changing the world that
I'm
in.
Your actions seem to have strong influence, which is something I think is missing from a lot of previous games, that the world really doesn't change off of what you do. And this, the world does really begin to change as you make, they're not really choices, but like as you complete things, the world changes.
I guess it's a choice to not give anyone the Pokemon they're asking for.
Like you never have to do any of the side quests. You
sorry,
don't.
Dude. I'm you're sorry like, you're afraid to go into your house. I got life
I got
to live.
Stuff to do.
Grow up. You're the grown up here.
That's your problem.
Did you guys do that one?
Which one?
Because I'm afraid to go into my house at night.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the one with Karen and she wants like...
Karen?
She has like the Karen hair.
Saquon, I think is her
name. I don't know any of their
names. Has Aqua in it?
I just know what future Pokemon people they're based off of.
She's the head of the construction core, and she's afraid to go in her house, and she's like, can you go in and see and investigate? And there is one point where you're like at the back of the room, and it's like you hear a noise at the front door, and you look at the front door, and it's like, I think I literally saw a demon flash. I was like, that's a little too scary for kids.
Hey, you're 15 in this game.
True. They make that very clear.
Very
clear. It's weird
because
in past Pokemon games, they got away from just mentioning age. I'm pretty sure Sword and Shield and Sun and Moon, Ultra Sun and Moon, they don't mention age at all. I like what you mentioned about the town where you're adding to it. And it's cool because, like one of the guys in the house, he's like, I want to see Parasect. And you can give him, you can give him anything. You can give him a Parasect, you can give him a shiny Parasect, you can give him an alpha Parasect, you can give him a shiny alpha Parasect, and then it will stay there.
Yeah.
Forever, I guess.
I did not realize that you could go into most people's houses.
Oh, because they don't make that clear.
It looks like your standard Pokemon. These are all just fronts and not actual places.
I have gone into every house.
And they got better with that in Sword and Shield. Like in Nessa's town, I'm pretty sure you can go in every house, and she has a bunch of houses along the streets. I want to say there's at least 10 houses that you can actually just straight up walk into. They're like the apartments next to each other.
Yeah, but you can usually see, like, in a Pokemon game, like, what kind of a door you can walk through versus not.
And there's none
this
of that.
This is not clear. But that was, like, frustrating for me because did you guys do the pickle jar?
Yes.
Maybe.
Which I feel really bad for that Geodude. but they're like, because
that Geodude is happy.
The quest said, like, find this. No, it wasn't the pickle, it was the Starly. And it's like, this woman, and it said her name, wants to see the Starly. And I had it, and I was like, I don't know where she is. And it's like before I figured out how to turn on the task tracking in the Arc phone. And I was like, I was going in every door, talking to every person. I was like, who is this woman? I don't even remember her asking me for anything.
Where are you? Of all the tutorial things, I do wish they had spent a little bit of time on task tracking and putting up markers.
Mm-hmm.
They just sort of don't talk about that at all, and it is an incredibly useful feature, especially when you have many, many side quests, and you're like,
also,
who am I talking? Who am I supposed to talk
to? I feel like this game just gave you way. I felt like there was way too much dialogue in how to do things
because that's you.
You don't like reading.
But here, wait, complete Scam Master. You know at the end? I think it's the end of Kleavor, like right after you defeat Kleavor. They're like, your Arc phone is like, oh, you can teleport to the field bases now. It's like, buddy, I've been teleporting to those field bases ever since I got two of them. This is nothing
new.
You
have to tell me. I've been flying around this region through the magic of teleportation. Or, as it shows loading screen, shadow running.
Hey, I like it. I like it.
Yeah, it's very jarring to hear you both be like, This game is light on tutorial because I felt like it was telling me new things constantly, and I was like, I know, I've already done it.
I don't know what to tell you.
And I felt like even in the dialogue of the characters talking to each other and like doing the story, I feel like they're also referencing things you can just straight up do. And that's why I was like skipping some of the dialogue because it felt like they were talking around like, oh, yeah, you can do this. And it's like, yeah, I know.
Well, because you saw too many spoilers. You ruined it for yourself.
I did not see too many spoilers.
See, that's the problem. Yeah, no, you watched somebody play the game. That's how you got all this info that neither of us have.
I think you're overestimating the amount of time I watch. Those Twitch streamers that got those games early, they were unbearable to watch. There's a reason they don't exist on Twitch anymore. They had their 5 minutes of fame. It's gone. They were not great. They were not entertaining enough to watch. I do think the side quests, there's always like a double-edged sword with me for side quests in like any game of like, these are too repetitive or too boring or the rewards you're giving me are not worth the time to do. And I have this constant fear that if I'm not doing enough before the next noble, that they're going to pile up. And at the end of the game, I'm going to have show trainer a Starly to get one potion. And it's like, so I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying I'm worried that I'm not doing them fast enough. And I don't want to get to the end of the game after I caught whatever many Pokemon and be like, oh, I still got to do that. Like, show the guy a tall weasel, which is like one of the first side quests you get.
And very aggravating because he doesn't define what tall weasel means. Until
you bring one, he's like, no, it needs to be above this size. Yeah. Like, you could have mentioned that at any point, buddy.
My counter argument to what you just said is, I mean, yes, the point of the game is to do side quests. That's it's key. If you're
Arceus told
quests,
us the point of the game is to, you know, pay
that's
ATT fee.
Look, there's the player, there's the me, the player character motivation. There's the king of the NPCs motivation, and then there's the various motivations that this is literature class here now.
Yeah. Shakespeare.
But, stop.
Almost.
we're getting there.
No,
you're
nowhere
doing
near there.
The side quests as they come, it's giving you opportunities to complete your Pokédex and to level up your Pokémon, because it's getting you into the field to do things that you might choose to ignore unless you had to do them as a side quest. So I think that's where one of the key benefits of doing the not pick three mushrooms. So, although then you find three mushrooms.
Yeah. There's been a couple where, I pick it up after what they want me to do, so I kind of have to do it again.
Oh, that Buizel one's not getting done until Arceus is sitting on my shoulder doing a tap dance, because that man, he got me so mad, he can...
I mean, I will say the Pokédex does help with that quest. Like, I realized from what it told me that I had completed that quest.
Oh, because doesn't some of the Pokedex is like catch five tiny ones or catch five big ones, which is like a very Pokemon Go has that as well with the Magikarp and the Rattata.
This is either a frustration or a feature.
Okay. The old FNF.
If you're giving me a page in the Pokedex that says do these things to complete this entry, how dare you change it as I go? Do not add more. Oh, no. Cyndaquil is like, do this. Have it do Ember. Watch it do a quick attack. And then you go back later and it's like, see it do Flame Wheel five times. And it's like, excuse me.
Is that just for the starter?
No. All of them do that. All of them do that.
Are you talking about ones that evolve?
No, just like ones that do anything. When they learn a new move, then it's like, watch it do this new move.
If you look at some of them, before you get introduced to the Agile Strong style, that's not in the Pokedex, and then it's there.
Yeah.
Once they talk about it, then it's like, see them do Agile and see them do Strong. It does change. Yeah, the moving requirements do, they do... But they do, like, as you get introduced to mechanics and it wants different things, the Pokédex does change.
It's like the very logic-driven mind, which I tend to fall into that, I want steps to follow and do, is like, just tell me. Because if I want to do like 100% completion of this Pokédex, I want to do every single one of these things. And then the more like, oh, hey, they're actually making Pokedex completion a little easier. It's saying, all right, we're giving you different opportunities as you go of ways to complete these Pokedex entries so that you don't have to be fixated on the ones that you haven't done.
Yeah. I mean, complete isn't perfect.
Yes. Do they stop counting after 10? So even if
stop counting after 10. So it goes from 1 to 10 and then just randomly perfect. Which is like part of the shiny hunting method. It's you get a.
I have a perfect Badoo page.
You get a plus one roll for getting a Pokemon to 10, and then you get a plus two roll on top of the plus one roll for getting it to perfect. I think. I don't have it in front of me, but I believe that is correct. Maybe it's a plus three. The wild area or Obsidian Fields is like both big and small at the same time. And I don't know if it's because the character just moves quicker, but a good example is that it takes 1 minute and 45 seconds for your character to run from the first base camp to the second base camp, which is exactly pretty much in the middle. So at the second base camp, it would then take you a minute 45 to run to the other end of that map.
If only you could go so straight, sure.
You can go. It's a straight shot from base camp 1 to base camp 2. There's one bridge.
To 2, but from 2 to the arena, you got to do that river thingy. And
Oh no, you just Breath of the Wild, just climb over every mountain and keep going straight.
I have fallen off a lot of mountains. I drowned once.
I've drowned a number of times.
I know to be cautious.
And I'd have to go back, and I think it's because your character just moves quicker, but I'm pretty sure in Sword and Shield, to get from the Onyx, that's like the first big spawn you see in Sword and Shield, mm-hmm. to the gate, is like a 4-minute walk. And I only know that is because speedrunners will run into the Onyx, purposely have Onyx knock them out, and then they get teleported to the gate, so they don't have to do that walk.
What about on the bike?
I have not tested bike. So I don't know if, like, is it Sword and Shield walking, then Legends running, and then bike, and then Weird Deer? Like, it's not a complaint.
Well, I am like, why is this an issue?
It's just, you can be, even though the area is bigger, because your character moves faster.
Not fast enough, because I use teleportation. I am not running through that world.
But also, it's very wide. Like, maybe the straight shot across is fast, like, from what's in front of you to the arena.
It's like a square.
I don't know. It's just, there's so many things I have to go up and over and find ways across that river. It just seems to take me some. Maybe I just get lost.
I also get lost all the time.
I just wander around. I have no idea where I am. Found your satchel, though, clumsy.
Yeah, way to go.
I will die every time for a shiny Pikachu. Don't you worry. Like, I do think you can just traverse the map really quick. Like, there was a part of the map that's, straight down, and I got there in, 30 seconds. I've never been there before. That was, the last part of the map. That was actually, I was probably 10 hours into Obsidian Field, and there was a part of the map I never went to. That's where the Mr. Mimes and the Gastrodons are.
I ain't been there yet.
And the first time I was there, the first time I looked at the map, I was like, oh, I need to go there. And then I got there in, 30 seconds. And I was like, I'm here now.
But the thing is, if you have a purpose...
Is that a problem?
Well...
Because when you can get places, it makes it feel smaller, quicker. Think about walking through the first gate of Sword and Shield, and then walking all the way to Hammerhead Fields. Even on your bike, you're going through a lot. You're going around the lake.
I still feel like Obsidian Fields is bigger than the entire.
No, it is. Yeah. It is. It is physically bigger. I am not debating that. But you can explore it so much quicker with the tools they give you, which is not a bad thing. But you can just zoom through that map so quick.
I also think part of the problem is and maybe this is a me thing, is if I see resources, I get. The resources.
Oh, they don't
ever.
But they don't slow me down. That's
I'm not that good. I kind of stop and look and see what's going on, and I'm still exploring. I'm still looking at stuff.
I am.
I'm not running out to get a Gastrodon. I want to watch the sunset.
I love
so
Weird Deer, but
gathering resources, and I am so over crafting.
Wait, do you guys know you can sprint?
Yes. Yeah. And then you get out of breath.
Yeah.
I never sprint. I am my least favorite mechanic in all games is inventory management. I hate it so much. Just hate it.
Well, you can pay Dudemar in the headquarters $1 million. So you get back. Oh, you know his name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bagging for my cash is what his name is. So he can give you one slot.
I hate it, and it does nothing for this game.
What? I think it's fine. What are you carrying with you? What do you need? I know people who haven't upgraded their bag at all, and they're 20 hours in, and they're fine. What do you need to carry with you?
Yeah, but then you have to keep going back to dump stuff out, and I don't want to think about it.
I just literally said how you can fast travel. It takes 30 seconds to get back to your box. What do you need to carry with you?
Then you miss all the opportunities between where you were and where your box is. What if that shiny Bidoof showed up and you zapped right past it?
I agree with Greg that inventory management, in most games, is terrible. I played a lot of Fallout, Fallout 3, Fallout 4. I over encumbered. I get it, but you can just fast travel and drop it off, or just not. Most of the stuff you need with you, you just don't need. Just stop taking flowers with you.
I drop stuff all the time. It's the issue of I don't want to pay attention to it. I'll get to a spot and it's like, you're full. And I'm like, why do I have to deal with this? Why? I don't want to go back and then work my way back here. I just got here. I don't want to fast travel back.
Well, if you just got there and you're full, you were doing. You have not played enough Monster Hunter. You got to prep for the hunt. You got to cook. You got to eat. You got to unpack. You got to pack.
Don't care about inventory management. I hate it in every game it's in. I hate it. It's dumb. It is not fun. It doesn't add anything to my experience. It is stupid.
I think it does add to this. The best thing they did in the other games is say
you have an unlimited bag space. And then I have to pay for more slots?
Then the problem is Greg would be complaining that the game's not realistic enough. This is what gives you realism. You only got so much bag. You ain't Hermione Granger here.
Do you think it's fun packing for a trip?
I really do like that in Monster Hunter.
I love that whole, like...
I hate it. It's
dumb. If I get my bag to 40 pounds, how much stuff can I buy, souvenirs, to come back before the airport yells at me?
I feel like the taking items out to do a specific task in Pokemon not only fits that world, but it also reminds me of, like, setting up a hunt in SOS. Is like, okay, I know that this Pokemon is going to do some sleep stuff. I know this Pokemon is going to recover. I know this Pokemon, like, the setting up for a shiny hunt of being like, all right, I'm bringing this one. Maybe I'm even hunting Graveler. He's going to explode, so I'm going to run a Pokemon with Damp. I like the planning that goes into the hunt. And while I agree that inventory management can be a bummer, I do like the planning of, like, my task today is I'm going to go out and find Cherubi. And I don't need potions. I don't need X Attack alcohol or whatever they decided to rename X Attack. I don't need these flowers. I'm going to only take one type of berry because, for the most part, berries are all doing the same thing. I haven't really figured out why I would want Nana Berry over Raspberry. It seems like they're all doing the same thing. Early in the game, I was full, and then I realized I don't need any of this stuff. Well, why am I carrying
it? I do think the berries do affect them the same way it happens in Go. I do think there is, if you throw out that berry, it does affect their behavior.
Well, there's throwing the berry into the field versus giving the berry to one of your Pokemon to heal a status condition.
So
that's why they have the different berries.
I think throwing in the field does do different things.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. I haven't really, like, messed with that. I know, like, one of the tasks was feed Teddy Ursa 10 times, and I was like, oh, bears love honey. I don't know, I got all this honey on me, and it was eating the honey. Definitely eat, but it wasn't counting. And then I switched to a cherry berry, and then that was counting. And
honey's a sweetener. It's not a food. It's a condiment.
It was weird that I watched it eat the honey, and it didn't count.
Honey is counted for me.
Yeah, it was. I was like, "Is it broken? What's happening?" But when I switched,
that's weird because I've I had to feed Badoo a million times, and I fed it honey. I fed it all a bunch of stuff.
I wonder if certain Pokemon only classify certain food to be
maybe. Food? When you look at the Pokedex and see if it's got but that's its favorite food. I don't know. That's weird.
Yeah, I don't, because I know for some of the item descriptions, like for the, it's like the honey cake and the dazzling honey.
Oh, I haven't used any of those. I don't even know what
No. So in the description, it literally says, this will attract bug and fairy type Pokemon.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah, like, I haven't done any of the cake stuff. That's like new to the game.
Yeah, I haven't done any of the cake stuff.
A lot of reviews that I read talked about how I keep calling it a wild area. I don't know what else to call it.
Obsidian Fields.
But like it's going to apply for the other four areas. Like some of the reviews I read said that they feel the fields feel empty, or the wild area feels empty, or there's nothing to do, which I can kind of see what they're saying. Like it is less populated than Sword and Shield's wild area, right? Like, do you remember the island where you go to it and then like 18 beware pop up, or if it's raining, it's Kingler. Yeah. Like, there's not a point in Legends where you're actually seeing 18 Pokemon.
Well, except for Geodudes. There's so many dang Geodudes. Too many Geodudes. And they're
going to disagree with that point, but I am further in the game.
Yeah, but...
When you walk first out, you see 3 Bidoofs. And maybe you see 1 or 2 Starlies, but you don't see, like, 10 Pokemon.
But I think that's more realistic.
No, I agree.
I was setting up
the point. I right outside the Kingler Beware Isle, there's like that Duskull area, and you do see like a dozen Duskull. Mm-hmm. And even when I got to, I'm trying to think of an area that had more Pokemon than normal, even an outbreak, there's only 4 at a time.
Where the Stantlers were, there were a ton of Stantlers. They were real mad that I walked up on them.
Like when I went down to the Gastrodon area, there was probably 4 Gastrodon and maybe like 3 Shellos. And I was like, wow, this is... But that whole beach, that was like... The whole beach was pretty big. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think that like because of the nature of this game and because they're going for this like more detailed wild area, maybe, I guess, that it feels more natural. You know, like... If you're walking into an actual forest, you're not seeing...
If you're walking into an actual forest, you aren't seeing animals because they generally avoid you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, like, apart from squirrels and birds, all of whom are going to run the minute you get close, you might maybe see a rabbit.
Maybe a bird.
I mean, that sounds like my backyard. But they also, like, spawn... pretty quickly. It's like you can't really depopulate an area without turning around and having some more show up.
You know where you breed in the wild area?
Yes, and between
like
the 2 bridges.
There's like the Obstagoon there. If you ride your bike,
oh, Sword and Shield. Okay,
when you ride your bike up and down, you probably see 25 to 30 Pokemon from like the nursery to the Alcremie den, which is straight across.
Yeah, but it's just like, to me, that's just like, it's not realistic. Like, am I really going to be going someplace and seeing 8 Pokemon in this tiny patch of grass all hanging out at the same time?
I think Legends feels better.
Legends feels way better because those things come and try to kill you a lot. And if it was 17 of them, I'd be like, I cannot. Oh. I'm already at the point where in this game, I'm like, I cannot deal with this area right now.
I have this whole section, and it's like, Rapidash, go away.
But that's why I think the movement is just so much faster. Because even though you're only seeing, like, in my head, it's like, here's a patch of Bidoofs, here's a patch of Bidoos, here's a patch of Psyducks. And there's like 1 or 2 Pokemon that kind of like transition that into it. But because your character moves so quickly, it does feel like you were consistently seeing Pokemon. Whereas if your movement was as slow as it was in Sword and Shield, which I think in Sword and Shield, you don't even move that slow. I think you move really fast in Sword and Shield too. Mm. Like it feels like it takes longer to traverse. So even though like it's not as jam-packed as the grass patches in Sword and Shield, I do think it feels natural, and I think it feels good. But I guess I could maybe see why reviewers would be like, oh, yeah, there's nothing to really do in these areas. But also, maybe that's the case when you're, like, 100 hours in. Because I have the problem I had in, like, Breath of the Wild. Sorry, we're bringing up Breath of the Wild. I have, like, 4 things I want to do at once. It's like, do I want to... do this side quest? Do I want to go to this area that's unexplored? A distortion just popped up. I'm still looking for this Cherubee. I haven't progressed the story. Oh, somebody just lost their satchel.
People lose their satchels a lot in this game, and I don't know what they're doing.
Stop being so careless.
Why are you all so clumsy?
Yeah, I think the concept of there's not enough to do is more... like, the person who's saying that has a limited range of what they want to do.
Yeah.
Because this game gives you plenty. There is. Just doing Pokedex completion could probably take you a year. If you wanted to do, like, a full everything that it asks for there. And just, yeah. There's tons. As long as you're willing to, you know, do what the game is guiding you as, like, this is what you have to do.
Yeah, there could be. The other worry I had was, like, in Final Fantasy 15, which is an open world game, they had a bunch of side quests. And not only were they not fun, they, like, took forever to get to, and they gave you garbage rewards. And I will I will say that the most of the rewards you get from the side quests in Legends are not great.
No. They're not.
They're not great, but I think they're easy enough to grab and to not think about and then to do while you're doing it. Which
the thing that saves the side quests for me is most of them have an interesting storyline behind them. Yeah. So I don't care about the rewards. What they are telling me about the world and the people that are in it make up for the fact that this is another herb I'm never going to use and I'm just going to dump it in a box.
And also, if a side quest is show me a completed page for this Pokemon, which a number of them are.
Yeah.
I was going to do that anyway.
Yeah, I think there are really, I think the structure of side quests are good. There are some that are like, here's a half a picture of a Pokemon. Find that for me. And that's great. I think those are really clever. And then there's the one where they describe you a Pokemon. Like, there's a girl in the basement of the headquarters. She's like, I'm looking for a Pokemon that's, like, blue and has vines everywhere. And, like...
Yeah.
And, like, that structure of quests is really cool. Because you don't even have to do a story for those two. You're just, like... It's like a who's that Pokemon, but in quest form. And then, yeah, there's, like, find the... fill out the Pokedex page. Hey, bring me this specific Pokemon. The farm area, which I feel like they don't... This was another thing they didn't show in the trailers.
Wait,
the pastures
really
or the berries?
The farm where you can either grow apricorns, berries, like, and then you can expand it.
A lot.
The thing that I actually think the game does bad is telling you to go back to Jubilife more often than you should. And I think maybe, like, this kind of brings me back to when Greg was like, inventory management sucks. I just think you're in the field way too long. Like, you should, you kind of should go out there, do what you want to do. Obviously, if you want to explore, explore. But, like, then you should set up your, like, okay, I'm going to drop some stuff off. I'm going to explore fresh because I'm going to come back with a lot of stuff. But in my first, like, 10 hours, I felt like I went back to Jubilife, like, only when they were like, you need to go back to Jubilife.
Yep.
But in reality, you should be going back to Jubilife more because you need to check the farm. And then the board in the professor's house gets updated. And then you can do your inventory management there. And then when you leave, Russ, or whatever his name is, he'll tell you if there's an outbreak. Which, that's like kind of the talk of the town. Well, the talk of the IRL. That's like the talk of Pokemon fans is like, how do we get outbreaks? There are two things that happen in the game. One is like the distortions, which are those huge domes that appear. And then when you go into the dome, it will despawn.
I haven't seen it yet.
Once you see one, they're all kind of the same.
They are star locked. So until I know outbreaks are.
Yeah, because I haven't had outbreaks yet either.
I think distortions are.
Probably three, I would guess.
Three, and I think outbreaks are 4-star.
You can get outbreaks before Cleaver.
Right. Yeah. But they are your star rank level based. They unlock with stars.
This is
So if you don't get them, if you don't get the stars, you're not gonna run into them.
You think distortions? Well, I mean, we could look it up on Cerebi, but distortions seem way harder than outbreaks.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
I mean, they're harder to do, but I think outbreaks are unlocked at. I could have them reversed because I got them close to each other. And around the same stars, and I wasn't really paying that much attention.
That if it's star locked, that I haven't seen it.
But I know they're star locked.
So for distortions, you'll just be running around and exploring, and then it will say a distortion appeared, and then you'll see like this huge like. You remember the Taken in Destiny?
Yes.
It's like they put up this huge dome, and when you go into the dome, your vision gets blurry for a second, and then it gets really dark. And then you're participating in a public event in the dome. And what will happen is the Pokemon in the dome, like if it's Bidoof, they'll despawn, just like in a public event. All those Destiny characters despawn. And then new characters will spawn in three at a time. And it will be like Ursa rings and Floatzels and like Porygons. It'll be like Pokemon you're not used to seeing.
And they will want to kill you.
And you can you can hide in the grass and like try to catch them. And then after, I think it's like 30 seconds, they despawn and then three more spawn in.
But, it's like Uber incense.
But the problem is that you can't save and reset in those. Like, so if you save and then you die and then you're like, oh, I'm just going to reset, like the distortion's gone. So if you like saw a shiny in a distortion, you can't like save in front of it and like,
right?
Like they're mostly evolved Pokemon. Like you can get a Gengar in it. Like I my second distortion, I caught Gengar, and they're a little bit difficult because once they see you, you're in like an arena, so you can't really like leave it. So it's like harder to hide and survive. And then also, if you choose not to catch, there's shards on the ground. There's like red shards or green shards or blue shards. So you can like run around and pick them up, but also while you're trying to dodge like onyxes.
And crockpots.
And
there are crockpots on the ground too.
So the first three I've done, I was like, wow, these are really cool. And they're really tense.
They are very tense because they literally everything wants to kill you the minute it sees you.
And you can, in most situations in this game, I feel like things can either go, it's like most stealth games, which I kind of like actually hate. I'm really bad at stealth games just because I'm bad at them. But it's like if you can stay hidden / stealthy, it almost goes way too smoothly. And the second you're seen, it's just a disaster.
Yeah, it's just you are running for your life until they despawn. Because
the first distortion I did, I don't think anyone saw me, and I caught like 20 Pokemon, and the distortion was over. But I also didn't move from the spot I was in, so I didn't pick up any of the shards.
Yeah.
And then the second distortion...
The first one I did, I was running around picking things up because I did not understand that they were going to start popping in, and then they started popping in. I'm like, oh, I'm dying. I need to leave.
And then, like, yeah, the second distortion I did, I was like, I'm literally going to die the entire time, and I got nothing done because I was just trying to stay alive.
Yeah.
Outbreaks. So the reason you'd want to go back to Jubilife is to, like, check your farm, check with any NPCs, buy or sell, inventory management, talk to Celine. That's her name, right? Celine?
Yep.
Yep.
And then when you leave, Russ will like tell you if there's an outbreak. So when you're in the field, distortions just happen. Outbreaks don't randomly happen. And like because I'm streaming on Twitch, people are like, "How are you getting outbreaks? I haven't gotten. I've played for 2 days. I haven't gotten an outbreak. Like, when's the last time you went back to Jubilife? Oh, I don't know. You have to go to Jubilife, and you have to leave for the guy to tell you if there's an outbreak. And if you're not going to Jubilife, you're never going to get one. And the game doesn't really, like, tell you that. It doesn't really, like, set it up that you should be going back to Jubilife more often. I mean, The farm is, like, a good enough reason, in my opinion, to visit Jubilife between things. But they also don't really, like...
I haven't started farming yet.
They also really don't tell you about the farm either. They're just like,
no, they don't tell you about the farm.
It's back there.
Well, yeah, but you go there, and he's like, it costs money, and we can't guarantee results. And I was like, well...
It's true.
I love farming. I don't like the way you're farming.
It's not like the farm in X and Y. It's more like a Poke.
Clearly.
It's more like a Pokepelago. It's not like the tree thing in Pokepelago. It's like the mining thing in Pokepelago where it's like, which of these five do you want to do? All right, come back later. That's what it's like. Speaking of coming back later, let's take a break. When we get back, we'll talk more about some other mechanics they've changed. And then up to the Cleaver fight. So we will be right back. This podcast is brought to you by ExpressVPN.
Going online without ExpressVPN is like entering the Obsidian Fields without a partner Pokemon. Most of the time, you'll probably be fine. But all it takes is one angry Geodude to roll up on you, and you can't fight back. And it'll make you wish you had protected yourself.
Every time you connect to an unencrypted network, like a cafe, hotel, airport, your online data is not secure. Hackers on the same network can gain access to and even steal your personal data, passwords, financial details, maybe the amount of shinies you have. It doesn't take a lot of technical knowledge to hack somebody. Cheap hardware is all you need. 12-year-olds are out there doing it. Look, they're playing Fortnite. They're also hacking computers. You can't trust those.
Mm-hmm. They're flossing and hacking. Flossing and hacking.
Your data is valuable. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per person selling your information on the dark web.
So why should we use ExpressVPN? It creates a secure encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. Hackers can't steal your sensitive data. They have a bunch of Porygons in there using Protect. It's amazing. It's super secure. It'd take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. It's incredibly easy to use. Just one button to click and get it all set up, and you're super protected. And it works pretty much across everything you need. Phones, laptops, tablets, ARC phones, you sure. name it.
You got to protect that ARC phone.
You got to protect that ARC phone. How are you supposed to know what you're supposed to do?
Yeah.
If you're not getting text messages from Arceus saying, yo, something's wrong.
Give me those 5 Bidoofs. You don't know if those Bidoofs are hacking. You got
They are too. Hacking, but that's why you got Porygon, putting up Protect.
And I mean, it's true because I have 5 computers, 4 of which are, you know, laptop, tablet type computers. I've got an iPad, I've got an iPhone, and I use ExpressVPN on all of them because that's like, that way I can be sure that I'm safe no matter where I go without even thinking about it, because it's so easy to turn on ExpressVPN. It's just one click and it's on. But, you know, it's the initial setup is super easy. And then I know that my data is encrypted no matter what network it's on. And even I even use it at home because I do not create my own internet out of the time-space rift. I buy internet from a company, and I don't know if they're paying attention to what I'm doing when I use their wires. So ExpressVPN makes me secure because everything is encrypted up to the ExpressVPN server, and anybody who's looking only sees ExpressVPN. They don't see that it's coming from Richfield, Minnesota. So,
secure both your ARC phone and secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/PKMNCAST. That is expressvpn.com/PKMNCAST. And if you go over there, you can get an extra 3 months for free using our website link of expressvpn.com. That was a bad sell. expressvpn.com/PKMNCAST. And we are back. Okay, so we talked a little bit about, we spent like an hour talking about.
An hour.
Not even a little bit about the game. Here's what I want to say. I think this game is absolutely incredible. I think it's worth $60. I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the question I've been getting all weekend is, what do you think about the game? And it really comes down to, do you have $60 and do you like Pokemon? If you do, then it's 100% worth it. If you hate Pokemon and have $60, I don't think so. If you like Pokemon but don't have $60, maybe you should get $60. I will say that Nintendo did send me a free copy.
Oh.
Well.
I did buy the game twice, though. I bought it digitally and physically for myself, for my collection, digitally for my wife to play. And she's been enjoying it as well. But I think when it comes down to it, I do think the game is incredible. I do think it's worth the $60. I do not think it is the best Pokemon game ever made. I don't think I'm being unfair when I say this, but I think the reason I don't think it's the best Pokemon game is just as simple as there's no competitive scene at all. And actually, one of my complaints is how they decided to do battles in this game. But
that is one of my complaints.
But like, it's just like even if the battle stuff was the same as Sword and Shield, the fact that there is no like online battling other people in general, the lack of a competitive scene does dock this points. There's no ribbons and marks, which I know some people don't care about. I like that stuff. It's not in this game. There's like no breeding in this game at all. So because of like those features, it just gets knocked down. I think if we take the world of Sword and Shield and then replace the Isle of Armor, Crown Tundra, and the main wild area with Obsidian Fields and whatever the other two is.
Well, all of the routes, even.
Yeah.
I think it would be, like, the best Pokemon game ever made.
But yeah.
Even though, like, the things I do like about the game are not in Sword and Shield, I do think Sword and Shield is a fuller... Sword and Shield plus the DLC is a fuller from start to finish Pokemon experience where you're doing a lot more. But I think what they have here is still incredible. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's a solid... I want to say it's a solid A-. There are things that I definitely feel let down by. I think the Agile Strong system isn't interesting enough. It doesn't really seem to have... It seems to suggest that it should have a much stronger impact on the game, and it just doesn't. I feel trainer battles were they always feel shoehorned in.
Like I said, second noble. I've done 7 trainer battles. 3 have been against the rival or whatever.
And I don't know why. They just feel like... Why? This isn't what this game is for. I also have an issue with the color palette they chose for the game.
I do find some things hard to see. Yes.
There's like a tweet going around. It's Legends running on an original Switch and Legends running on an OLED. And it's like night and day different in colors. Like it looks so much better on the OLED. It's incredible.
I mean, as it should.
I should hope so. But I have like... I don't have a problem with how the world looks stylized. Like, I like the trees. I think the trees are interesting. I like the water. I think the water areas are interesting. What I hate is how it's lit. Mm-hmm. And I hate how monochromatic they made the color choices in each area. It isn't visually interesting. Like, in one area, they're like, what would happen if we just took all the colors around brown and made everything brown.
But there's just not enough nuance because when you're doing the side quest that's like these 3 Bidoofs keep invading the village, at a certain point, I was like, I'm never going to find that 3rd Bidoof because the Bidoof color is the same color as the wood color. And it all looks the same to me. And my eyes just aren't that good. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I think Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee is a better looking game.
It's a different style. It is a brighter and more color rich game, and I give you that for sure. Those are my 2 biggest knocks on this game, is the color palette feels really weirdly muted, and I don't know most of the time what the light is supposed to be doing.
I want to caveat what Steve said with one more thing before we get too far away from it. Definitely I would recommend buying this game if you've got $60, you love Pokemon, and you're over 10 years old. This is not a Pokemon game for little kids because, number one, it's too complicated.
I don't think so. I think when I was 8 years old, I beat Ocarina of Time.
Congratulations.
I had a player's guide the entire time when I did it. I don't think that's a knock, but I think I think kids playing Fortnite or Breath of the Wild, I think they can play this.
But kids under 10 shouldn't be Fortnite either. But I think because with a regular traditional Pokemon title, you can brute force your way through that game. This, you're going to have a lot. You're going to just lose interest because it's just the complexities you are. And
Minecraft.
And they shouldn't. Minecraft is whatever. But the other thing is that I think this game exposes what the manga readers will say has been there the whole time, but like the violence of the Pokemon world in a way that other games never have, because they are literally like, if you don't do this, you're going to die.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you don't hold up, we're not going to take care of you. Like, literally, like, Celine literally says, like, if you become incapacitated and can't work, we're throwing you out. And it's like, you're on your own. And I'm like, but hey, but I'm 15 years old. No,
fell through a hole in the sky.
But it's like, you know, like, Pokedex entries sure have said, yeah, Drifloon is trying to carry kids away. In this game, there is a Drift Loon that is literally trying to carry a kid away.
Literally trying to murder
it is
that
right
kid.
Right in front of your face.
He literally tried to kill that kid.
Yeah, I think the game is worth $60. I think Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee, I think the style they used in that game fits the Pokemon whatever characteristics.
Vibe.
I think it fits the vibe. I think it's super colorful. I think it's great to look at. I think this game can be beautiful and is beautiful in moments. I've seen cutscenes later on the game that are absolutely stunning and gorgeous. It's impressive to me that this game isn't like graphically mediocre. Graphically, it is good and bad at the same time, and that's what's impressive. I don't know how they were able to do that. Like, in one moment, you're like, this sunset is beautiful, and then you turn slightly to the left, and you see, like, three Murkrows, like, barely flapping their wings, like, stuttering off in the distance, like, like, and you're like, the draw distance is better than I expected it to be. But
yeah,
also,
it's not great.
You should have it where, like, if Pokemon cannot render wing flapping more than three frames, just make them disappear. Like, because it looks terrible.
Yeah.
There are also parts of the clothing, and I hate this example, and like multiple people brought it up, of like when like the Commando, what's his name? Captain Commando. Kamado.
That
guy. He is a main character in the game. You are looking at his face quite often. And when you look at the top part of his kimono, I think it is so pixelated and bad. And the response I get is, oh, it's just a style they're doing. No, because look at the bottom of his kimono. It is incredibly detailed and rich. Like, there are just parts of these outfits when you're looking at these characters that are so pixelated and awful. And then other parts of the game are gorgeous. I don't think it's like an aesthetic thing that they're trying to make it look like old stitching. Literally, the bottom of his kimono is incredibly detailed in every cutscene, but the top is super pixelated. I think that there's some weird texture thing happening where some of the textures just look really bad, or they're not popping in, or they're getting held back. There's parts that just looks awful.
Some of it I blame on the lighting choices.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, I sometimes don't think it's the model texture. I think it's how the light interacts with the object is so weird that it makes things pixelated. And I've noticed this a lot of times, that the way they chose to do light makes things look worse. And he is an example, because if you look at him in other areas, where the parts that are brightly lit look awful. And as you go down where it's darker and it's normal shading, they look great. I think they completely messed up the lighting in this game, and it makes me upset every time. I'm like, can I just go at night when you're not trying to do light? Because everything looks great at night. When you do light, it is awful. Also, I am staking my claim here and now that Adaman is my Hisuian boyfriend. And
oh, you can have him.
Nobody else.
I'm Volo. Team Volo all the way.
There's also,
I don't trust Volo.
I don't trust most of my boyfriends either. So
Soul Calibur ruined the name Volo for me, and I don't.
I'm glad. I had the same thought. Every time I see him, I think Soul Calibur.
Yeah, and I think you are untrustworthy.
I would say that I'm probably, my Steve-ness is, rather than not reading the text of the game, I don't pay that much attention to the graphics. So I was like, I have literally not noticed any pixelation.
I did have a person go like, why do you care so much about the graphics? Look, I put 2,000 hours in Sun and Moon. That game looks like booty because it was running on a 10-year-old 3DS. Like, it doesn't look great. Game Freak had very actual hardware limits on that device, as we saw in Ultra Sun and Moon, where the game got really frame ratey and chunky and stuff. I think that like graphics are important, not to everyone, but to some people. And like, I am not personally a fan of this common thing that's been happening for the last like 5 years, which is like let's make all our indie games as like Super Nintendo games because the cost is cheaper. But they like, yeah, I get it. Super Nintendo games, they look a specific way. They age a specific way. For the most part, it looks good. But graphically, I'm just so over that style. And your game has to be really good for me to get over that, like, let's do the Super Nintendo style. And like Stardew Valley passes that test. It is one of those games where it's like, it's so good that I do not care that it's Super Nintendo graphics. I think that Legends is so good that it gets past looking very mediocre in places. Again, we know they can do good graphics. They did Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee. And for the most part, I think Sword and Shield looks great. I don't think that, hey, after you've done Let's Go, after you've done Sword and Shield, heck, let's talk about a really good Pokemon game, Pokemon Snap. That game is incredible. So don't come to me and be like, oh, the graphics are just fine. Yeah, they are just fine. But we have seen good Pokemon games, specifically good Pokemon graphics in Pokemon Snap. And it's like, I would like that in Legends. Is it a deal breaker? No, of course not. It's not, because the gameplay does make up for the graphics. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be asking for good graphics. And the graphics alone will push some people away. Where I think for Let's Go, I think because of how great that game looked, it did draw people in.
I mean, I think it's hard to distinguish when, because people still use graphics as a blanket term. And it covers a lot of things. And I think where this game falls down is the color choices they made and the lighting choices that they made. And I think those two things ruin a lot of vistas that could be really stellar. We are used to, at this point, draw distance. Like, we understand, like, if you played any online game, things will suddenly phase in and act janky until you get close to them. Like, that is just rendering, and your graphics engines will render things differently, whatever. But the deliberate choices of how they did lighting and how they did colors, they did a disservice to this game, because it really makes the game, in certain areas, it's hard to play because I'm like, I can't see. Like, I'm looking at 15 shadowy blobs and none of it's lit correctly, and I don't know what I'm looking at, and I don't know what I should be seeing.
I think Greg is right with the lighting, because one of the easiest way, I think, for somebody listening to the show to see how good the game can graphically look is actually in a distortion. Because it's dark, and how the distortion is laid out is actually really cool. So
yeah.
The distortions always look great.
Yeah. They did something, and I said that to Brent, and he's like, yeah, I don't know what they did to the light, or what the light's even supposed to be doing most of the time in this game, because it just looks weird all the time.
The other thing I want to shift to is the thing I like about the game the most. And this was the frustrating thing for me in trailers. And even, I mean, like, obviously, if you've been listening to the show for the past year, you've probably heard me being very hesitant about being overly excited for this game.
I dreaded playing this game the entire week before I got it.
You know, for the most part, they didn't use the word open world. It's not an open world game. You can't really go anywhere you want. It's broken into five areas. It's very Monster Hunter-y in that aspect. That was never like the concern to me of like, oh, if it's not open world, it's going to be bad. The concern to me was that these open worlds would feel empty and they wouldn't feel things to do. And it would be very tedious and grindy if your goal was to complete the Pokédex. The thing that they spoiled for me, which we talked about last week, was entering and exiting a battle. And the people would be like, Steve, they did show exiting and entering a battle. And I was like, no, it's not the process of entering and exiting a battle. It's like what you can do, like the fluidity. How fluid is this game? That is what sold me, and that's the thing they didn't show in the trailer. In the trailer, they didn't show, you see 3B Doof, and you're like, Pokeball to the face, Pokeball to the face, Pokeball to the face. Starly over here to mine this. Luxray over here to mine this. That 1B Doof broke out. Turn around real quick. Pokeball to the face again. Like, the ability to mine, gather resources, catch Pokemon, quickly go into a battle, defeat the Pokemon while you're walking away getting experience. You're entering another battle. They never showed that in a trailer. And that, I think, is what makes the game so special and so much fun to play. And I think that's super important why it's worth the $60. If you couldn't do that, I actually think this game would be very mediocre and actually not as fun as what all, you know, people are saying. Because if you just think about, like, Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl, a game that came out 2 months ago, it is similar to mostly every Pokemon game. You enter the grass, your trainer stops, screen either goes white or black, it goes... Pokemon slides in, your trainer slides in, flashes to your trainer, you throw a Pokemon, flashes to that Pokemon, flashes to this Pokemon, goes back to making sure that you're still watching, flashes back to that Pokemon, health bars come in, abilities maybe trigger, and then you can start the battle. And then you knock it out, it does its fainting animation, your trainer gets all excited, it pops up about the Pokemon's, like, experience, what would you want to name it, you caught it, what is its social security number, here's its blood type, it's going to PC-14, hey, did you remember to do your taxes, and then, like, the battle is over. Like, all of that happens in a traditional Pokemon game.
It has never asked me to do my taxes.
I don't know what version you're playing.
Yeah, you're playing the wrong. In this game, I can impale the back of three Bidoof's booties, and they're caught in the time of like 10 seconds. And it is if we go back to that, if we lose this, I don't know if I could ever actually play another Pokemon game again. I don't know if I can. Do the 45 seconds to catch one Bidoof versus the 10 seconds to catch three. I don't know if I can actually go back because it's that fun, that fluid, that good. It's incredible.
You know what else they didn't show in the trailer? Throwing out a Pokeball at a tree full of Chesto berries because you forgot to hit X.
It's like, all the
again?
Time.
Again!
So frustrating. Why is that the same button?
Even here's something getting on and off a Weirdeer or switching to another Pokemon that you can possibly unlock, incredibly fluid. This is the thing the game does incredibly well, is just the movement, the exploring, the like giving you choices and not feeling like I need to battle now. I need to then mine now. It's you can like do everything.
The catching to battling. How you control that is so fluid in this game, and it's what I want games to be going forward, because it feels so real and so natural. And I do not want to give up the ability to go into a menu and choose my moves and have the option that they don't evolve and I have to hit B. I have to go into a menu and say, okay, you get to evolve now. You get to evolve now, because it is my choice. I don't have to interrupt something. I don't have to, at the end of a battle, if it happened to pick up a new move, go, oh, do I want Flamethrower? What am I going to get rid of? And I'm forced to have that decision there. It is blissfully, I didn't even know I wanted it, but blissfully away from my real-time experience, and I can sit down and have a conversation with my Pokemon. What moves do you want today?
So I will definitely agree. One thing I love about the fluidity, especially when you're like in a battle scenario, is the fact that if I've been battling and I want to throw a Pokeball, I just hit X, select the Pokeball I want to pick, and then throw it. Or if I want to change the Pokemon, I just, you know, toggle to that. I don't have to go into a menu to select a different and do the swap and everything.
I do like that you can do both, though.
Contrary, a quality of life that they took away, and, you know, I don't find a lot of things to complain about, but this is a stick in my craw. You cannot go into your satchel, select a Pokemon, and from a menu say, restore. You have to pick the item first and then pick the Pokemon.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I want to heal
yeah.
Cyndaquil. Why?
I think this goes back to the
10 years I've been just hitting restore.
I think this goes back to the bag management where I feel like I don't even bring revives with me or potions anymore. If I'm like, you know, if I've finished catching an alpha and three Pokemon died, it's just like, all right, it's time to go back and heal and drop off items and whatnot. I do. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the battle, this is a good transition. This is a complaint, but I didn't think I'd be complaining about it in this way. I knew going into the leaks that there was no held items and there was no abilities. And to me, fine. Like, I get it. You came out and said that this was not a competitive game. I understand. I still enjoyed my time with Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee. I still thought that battling the Elite Four was fun in Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee. I had some fun with some of the Master Trainers in Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee, even though that 90% of the Master Trainers, you did Toxic, you protected, you Toxic stalled, you protected. It was, and it's not the Agile Strong Style. I do agree with what Greg said earlier. I think it's kind of like lackluster. I'm probably not going to one-shot this. I'm going to Strong Style. Now I'm going to one-shot it. Cool. That's really what it comes down to. I think the thing about the battling is it's just so uninteresting. Like, they forgot about it. I am two nobles in. I have not changed a single move on a single Pokemon. It doesn't matter. It literally doesn't, like, and I think that's the thing I was thinking about is because you've only battled at this point seven trainers, and each trainer, with the exception of one, has one Pokemon. There's a trainer that has two Pokemons. After Cleaver, they just get a second Pokemon and you battle them again. I'm lost for words. It's
Do you mean trainer battles or wild Pokemon battles?
Both. Like,
okay, I can't agree with you there, because that's something that may be informed just because you have more knowledge and experience doing Pokemon battles.
Be that I have more knowledge and experience of, like, moves and type weaknesses and,
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, because
but
my
like,
butt is getting handed to me like more often than you would expect.
Like, I caught an Alpha Parasect, and it knew a grass move, a poison move, Slash, and Spore. And the main reason I keep him is because he has Spore. But Parasect is grass poison. I got the grass stab. I got the poison stab. The poison is Venoshock. They changed Venoshock in this game. In past games, Venoshock is, if the Pokemon is poison, Venoshock does double. In this game, it says, if the Pokemon is a status condition, it does double. Well,
yeah.
Perfect. I have Spore. Why would I change that move? And I have Slash, because Slash is a neutral critical hit move. Like, it has been the same for 20 hours. I have zero desire to change its moves. The moves that are on the Pokemon just seem good enough, and I don't need like coverage, in my opinion, because it kind of goes back to like, well, I'm going to go catch this alpha. I'm going to catch this alpha Vespiquen, so I'm not going to bring Pokemon weak to bug or flying because that's what Vespiquen is. So I'm just going to swap out some Pokemon that are equivalent to that level. And then I'm just going to get her, and she's probably going to kill three of my Pokemon. That's fine. I'm going to catch her and then go back and cash her in.
Why are you so comfortable with your Pokemon dying?
He's cruel. That's why.
So my problem with the battling is that in my mind, if I have a level 15 Cyndaquil going against a level 2 Starly, I should just hit that Starly and it's gone. But for some reason,
yeah,
the number one, the lower level Pokemon hit harder than I expect when they
hit
back.
Very hard.
And I'm having it, like, my Cyndaquil, I was like, did I get just like a garbage roll of the dice here? Because this dude is getting knocked out left and right.
Bodied. Yeah, I did notice that, and I'm not 100% sure what's happening there, and it's fine. It's like interesting in a way that like you just can't one shot. But I think like they did do a quality of life feature where what Greg said is you can just go in and start changing moves. You can do that anywhere. They give you like a mirror. There's like miracle seeds where if you go to the one person in the Jubilife, they'll like master a move.
Except, mastery seeds. Seeds of mastery.
Except they don't explain that either. And also, the one move that I needed Stantler to master, it was because it was a Stantler exclusive move. They refused to master it for you because for whatever, literally no reason except that it's an exclusive move for Stantler and you can't master it. You have to do it by level up. The point being is they made it so you can change your moves anytime, but the battling is so uninteresting that it doesn't even matter. It's just like, and they changed it in a way too. So it, for those that are unfamiliar with competitive battling, which is totally fine, in Brilliant Diamond, Shining Pearl, the reason I was able to like not need any items or not need to revive during the Elite Four is because if I knew there was a Pokemon in front of me that couldn't do any, like, here's a really good example. My Gastrodon pretty much destroyed the entire Elite Four. The reason why is because as soon as the Elite Four sent out a physical Pokemon, as long as it wasn't grass, I would use the move Harden. The third episode of the anime, Harden Metapod. I would use the move Harden, and I would use it 3 times. Then I would use the move Recover, and then I would use Harden 3 more times. And now it was +6 defense. And whatever they threw out at me couldn't touch me. And that was the strategy I used. Fair strategy, right? Harden is in the game. Recover is in the game. I didn't use any held items. I didn't use any X attacks. I didn't use any X speeds. I just hardened, recovered, attacked. In this game, you can't do that. You can use Harden once, and that's it. You can use Harden again, but it's not going to do anything. That you just use it once, and you're done. And why was that a choice? Why, like, like, not only are you not doing enough battles to make that like really relevant, even like, I'm not exaggerating. I've battled 7 trainers, and 3 battles have been against the rival. 2 battles have been against Volvo or whatever his name is.
Volo.
Like, you would never do that. I guess you could Swords Dance twice, but why? It's just they'd have one Pokemon, and it's the same for Wild Battles. You could Swords Dance twice, but why? It's just one battle. Go through the effort of like oversimplifying that when the thing that you would. Like, the reason you Swords Dance in front of somebody is because you're predicting or because you're setting up. But if it's only 1v1, there's not a huge reason to do that.
Have you run into double battles yet?
No. Well, I mean, I had 3 Zubats attack me. But again, you wouldn't want to Swords Dance there because you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. That's the whole point of, like, the Swords Dance or the Harden is because you're kind of like setting up / predicting. If you got 3 Zubats there, probably a bad time to predict a Swords Dance.
Yep. I feel like they wanted the agile and strong style to play a bigger role, and I'm just not seeing it. I do change up moves quite a bit, partly because suddenly there's new entries in the Pokedex that I have to deal with. Because, oh, they figured out this move, so now you have to see it 20 times.
Or even, I just want to see the animation for that move, because the move animations look real cool.
They do look good. They look
great. Really good. And I do think there are reasons to change moves.
Yeah, I'm not saying there's not.
I don't think it's as important in this game as it will be if they keep this mechanic in future games.
Yeah,
and so I do feel like Arceus is the test of these new ideas.
I hate this. Every Pokemon game is doing something new.
No, I it does do something new, but I do think there are a lot of ideas that a lot of people have said you should do this, and this game was what they included and what they took away. I feel like it was I feel more than any other game that's done something new. That this is a test of a new direction.
Let's go Pikachu, let's Eevee, literally put Pokemon in the wild. Like, and it worked. Sword and Shield has 3 wild areas that are very, I don't like when people are like, this is maybe the game where they're testing. It's like, no, they've been testing, like, they've been doing all of this stuff. You're just not looking.
They tested all those things in those games.
Well, if they're testing a worse battle system, they've achieved because it's awful.
Yeah,
I think going along with what Greg is saying, I would say the strong and agile is either a further development of Isle of Armor, right? Because you had your, you chose your Urshifu, yes, and it had a battle style, and it even became a TCG. Or it's the foundation for the next way, you know? Or, well, I mean, it's honestly, it's Mega Z Moves Gigantamax, you know.
I would wager to bet they simplified it for the sake of simplifying it. For people, like, there are so many, like, I learned this from Dynamax Adventure. Like, people listening to the show probably have a pretty good grasp of type effectiveness and what moves do and why you would use String Shot, right? Like, String Shot's actually, like, a decent move. Like, surprise, it is, especially in double battles. And I get why they would simplify it in the sense of, like, hey, you know, we're not really focused on battles, mostly worry about the catching. But if you do, but in my head, I don't think simplifying something like Swords Dance is beneficial to a, if we're going back to what Swords Dance should be in a future game. And I don't see them being like the plus six, minus six status condition. I don't see that going away. Because even changing something like Tailwind, which they did do, they did a minor change to Tailwind. Well, not minor change, but they did a pretty big change from Tailwind from Gen 7 to Gen 8. Changed how you set up the matches. And it changed it in a good way. I don't think these changes are good. I think they're simple, and I think they are...
I don't think a lot of the changes are good. I am struggling with understanding paralysis versus drowsy at this point. Because in the game, functionally, they seem to do the exact same thing.
They change it in a way where it's just so uninteresting. And I don't know if it's because... I don't even mind that there's a lack of trainer battles. I mean, we talked about this for the last year. It doesn't look like there's trainer battles in this game. There's not. I mean, there are, but like...
I don't think... The ones that they're in, I don't think are worth it.
No, yeah, I don't think there's...
They feel real shoehorned in.
And this is going to lead to my second complaint. Holy cow, are the noble battles the worst part of this entire game? I will get on my soapbox. I am always happy when Game Freak or whatever company tries something new. Do it. Try it. See if it works. If it doesn't, no big deal. You're going to be making Pokemon games for the next 25, 50 years. You'll be able to change it. But in a game with, you battle four people before you get to Cleaver, maybe five, you are forming a team of six Pokemon by catching and battling wild Pokemon, three Zubats at once, 17-foot tall Rapidashes. You are battling these Pokemon to get to what is ultimately a boss battle, a battle of wits and strength. And you, for 5 minutes, throw ramen packets at Cleaver, and the battle is over, and that is it. Why am I building a Pokemon
team? Easy.
it actually makes Cleaver harder to use your Pokemon. It slows down the battle in a way where you're like, why am I even doing this? It would have been faster for me to continue throwing ramen packets around the corner. Like, it is, and the second noble, which I will not spoil who that is, it is the same thing, except there's no tree to hide behind. I was like, maybe the second noble battle will be better. Nope, you're still throwing ramen packets. Nope, you're still
dodging.
Wait
till you get to the third.
And I don't know if the second one broke for me, but all the nobles have a yellow bar, and the bar is broken into four categories. And when I got the second noble to the 75%, it said, they are stunned throughout your Pokemon. And I was like, okay. And I went to do that, and then they were no longer stunned. And
you got to get it out quick.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do it.
Short window.
And there's footage of this. The entire rest of the battle, they did not ask me to throw out my Pokemon. I ramened them from start to finish. I asked myself, why do I have a team of Pokemon?
Because, but also the thing that they didn't, when they first showed, like in the trailer, the throwing the packets at Kleavor, they left out that you don't get to throw out your Pokemon until it hits the tree. That's what triggers for you to hit to throw out your Pokemon.
No, and mechanically, I know why you throw out your Pokemon.
No, no,
thematically,
this is not the
why do I
the
have
when.
A team?
Well, I mean I lost to Cleaver. I don't know if you did, but I no. Cleaver killed me. And one thing I do greatly appreciate is that they gave you the option to either restart the battle completely from the beginning or from where you left off. So they're basically acknowledging that, hey, this is a story point, not a gate.
Well, there was some accessibility concerns of like...
There are.
Like, both the noble battles are very dexterity slash roll slash dodge, and you can't just Pokemon battle them. You have to aim and throw and roll and dodge.
I mean, I will say that the window for throwing your Pokemon out is too short. I don't think it's worthless because...
It's worthless to throw your Pokemon. Don't do it. It takes more time. Just keep throwing ramen. It's faster.
I mean, time-wise, but...
Do your Pokemon get experience if you don't include them in the battle?
What does it matter? You're not using them for the next noble battle. You're going to throw more ramen at them.
Oh, but I still got to level up my Pokemon.
I in all three, it has been worthwhile for me to battle because the bar goes down very far.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely accelerates it. Definitely.
Absolutely.
I bet if you put side by side just ramening them and ramen Pokemon, just ramening them is faster. 100%.
Anything to get me out of the dodge cycle, I am taking.
Yes. Agreed.
Anything to get me out of the dodge cycle, I am 100% taking that, especially the third one got me to an anger point that I rarely get to.
Here's the thing, though. Even if the ramen is faster than using a Pokemon, and even though, like, I'm still asking myself, why do I have this team of Pokemon if I'm not being able to, like, showcase them finally? It's just not fun. The ramen part is not fun. Like, dodging around Cleaver or dodging around the second Noble, when you go from what I said earlier of, like, I can, like, whip Pokeballs at Bidoofs, I can jump on a Stantler, I can jump over a Snorlax, I can go farm a bunch of these trees and, like, peg the back of Mr. Mime with a Pokeball in the back of his head and it feels real good and it's real great and it shakes. Like, the fluidity and the it's just fun. It just feels good, looks good. Everything about that is fun. Running around a tree, throwing ramen packets at Cleaver?
I think that is as fun as any dumb Zelda boss where you just have to, like, learn the trick. To get the boss.
I can see the comparison, but it's just... But the difference between Zelda and you, and this game is I've been training these six Pokemon. They're on my team. I've been, like, leveling them up. If I was one of you two, I probably would have taught them new moves.
But
and I don't really get to showcase them at all.
You are... I think that one of the key things that sets this game apart that you're missing is the you that you are in. They are judging you. You are part of it's not this weird world where you and I have a disagreement but our Pokemon are gonna fight it out.
I
don't know if this happened to you, but I was in a regular Pokemon battle and for some reason not paying attention, walking around, got between Geodude and Cyndaquil. Guess what? Geodude knocked me on my butt.
I can get hit during
a Pokemon battle.
I think that is cool. I definitely think that is cool.
That is what these noble battles are saying, is you are in this world as well. You have to be a functional part of the world. It's not just your Pokemon.
I think story-wise and thematically, the noble Pokemon battles are interesting. I think, however, doing them grinds the game to a halt in a way, because I do agree that the whipping of ramen packets and the dexterity based jumping around is not super thrilling gameplay.
And I will say, just for the people who don't watch my stream, I had zero problems with both nobles. Like the second one hit me like twice while I was learning their pattern, And then I figured it out. And I was like, you're not, like, I know how to dodge everything now. And now it's just the ramen waiting game.
Keep in mind, you can do as much as you want before doing a noble Pokemon.
Oh, I did. I did.
Everything stops until you do this. Yes, there are gates to open.
Here's the thing. Everything is more fun than doing that noble Pokemon.
But that's fine. It's a gate. You do the gate. You get past the gate.
It is equivalent to, hey, everything in between every gym leader is great. The gym leaders are bad. Gym leaders are good. They are fun. They are something you prepare for. They're something that like signifies that I'm done with this area. They are something that like, what are they going to use? Who is their ace? What is their dialogue? Like, I still remember the first time I entered Clay's gym. Clay's not even that good of a gym leader, but I remember entering Clay's gym and going down and doing the puzzle and like being like, what Pokemon do you have? Holy cow, you have an Excadrill. Like I remember that. And what am I going to remember from Cleaver? That I like stood behind a tree and he kept running into the tree over and over because he couldn't figure out how to get around the tree and I just ramen packaged him. Again, I'm glad they tried something new. But the weakest part of your game is like the gym leader part of like the test of strength to move on to the next area. I got more of a thrill and I had more enjoyment trying to take down a level 40 Parasect when I was level 25, and the Parasect killed 5 of my Pokemon. None of my Pokemon were above level 25. This Parasect was 40. I had it paralyzed. I was like, I'm going to die here, but I really want to catch this. I threw a heavy ball. It broke out. It was fully paralyzed. It gave me one more opportunity to throw another heavy ball because the Parasect had like 2 HP, and I caught it. And it felt incredible to do that. And I've heard that experience from other people where catching alpha Pokemon feel just as good as catching a shiny Pokemon. And I think they've accomplished that, and I think that they figured it out. I think that catching Pokemon feels rewarding and feels good. I think the alpha Pokemon are a great balance of challenge and give you a reason to catch something. And then you look at the nobles, and you're like, this is just a dodging puzzle. Like, it seems like a disconnect out of what the rest of the game is. And yeah, there's only 5 of them. But they're supposed to be like these big keystone moments in the game, and they just fall flat.
I mean, they are big keystone moments story-wise.
Yeah.
But gameplay-wise, things that I wished is I thought there would be more chances to battle than there seemingly are. So far, in the ones that I've done, the message has only popped up once, which I'm like, okay, I wish it was a bit like Max Raid Battle Shields. Like, you get to a certain level and the shield comes up. I wish that was got to a certain level. Now you battle. Go back. Now you battle. It's not. And I don't look forward to noble battles. Like, it is a dexterity-based jumping, figure out the pattern thing, and the arenas get weird. It's fine. It story-wise, I love them. Gameplay wise, I don't enjoy doing these things as a thing that I have to do in the game.
But going back to what Steve said at the very beginning, right? The point of the game is to collect all the Pokemon so that you get to meet Arceus and hopefully he sends me home back to my comforts of the modern world.
Arceus is the worst Tinder date. He just is like, you swiped right, get in.
But right, the noble Pokemon, they are a story point. And they make it like not even a gate. I mean, just to be very clear for anybody who is afraid because of what people are saying, the noble Pokemon can kill you. And you literally get the option of start where I left off. So if you had thrown enough ramen packets to get it to like half rage, you start up your full health again and it's at half rage.
Yeah.
So you just keep knocking it. So it's like it is a story.
Well, they didn't do that, people would quit the game.
Correct.
But it's not the key to like it's not key gameplay. It's like this is what Pearl Clan cares about.
I The only thing is I wish it was more exciting. I wish there were more chances in the noble battles to actually battle with my Pokemon. I don't hate it. I also don't love it. It is a boss battle mechanic that I just accept as, like, again, they that took one. The JRPG button and ranked it to 11. It's, and it, this is
it
this
feels
is a
like
thing that
a 10-year-old boss battle that, like,
yeah,
somebody played Ocarina of Time and was like, let's put that, like, mm-hmm. it just feels outdated too. Like, it feels like a mechanic that was very popular in old action RPGs that we have moved past by this point. And I don't particularly love most action RPGs, with the exception of, like, Monster Hunter. They were a letdown. I don't think it's sour. Again, at the start of this podcast, this game is incredible. Like, everything else makes up for it. The mediocre graphics, and again, I think the graphics look good in some places. I think it falls incredibly flat in other places. I think the graphics are a bit of a bummer. The sound is really good when it works. Sometimes, like, you just don't get music.
Sometimes you don't get music for a lot of the game, where I'm like, I was in an area and music suddenly kicked on, and I'm like, what?
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking, that this is the perfect game for Steve, since you always play with the sound turned off. I was like, well, there's no sound.
I have put 2,000 hours into Sword and Shield. I have never not played it with the sound off.
You always used to complain about me playing with the sound on my 3DS.
But the thing is, what I noticed is when you go into stealth mode, it quiets the music down. And I'm like, Is this my Arc Phone playlist? Why did I have to mute it to go silent? It's like a weird choice. And the music doesn't work all the time.
I
was literally surprised when music kicked in, because I thought this was a musicless game.
I have played every Metal Gear Solid. Loved all of them.
Hate stealth games.
It was very clear through every Metal Gear Solid, I very bad at stealth. But those games make it, well, you could play it stealthy or not. And it's a little bit harder if you're not stealthy. It's what I said earlier. Like, it seems like the game is a cakewalk if you can stay in stealth. And it seems like every single part of the kitchen is on fire as soon as somebody sees you. And it's very hectic. I think they accomplished stealth in this game actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like tedious stealth. It does feel rewarding for your patience. Like, I would rather wait in the grass for like 10 seconds to catch a Teddy Ursa than to make that Teddy Ursa upset and then be forced to battle it.
I agree.
Like, I think it is rewarding for you to stay there. And then once you get a little bit more complex, and it's like, if you do upset them, you can switch to like the spoiled apricorns, you can nail the Teddy Ursa in the face, switch back to the Pokeball, then throw it, and then you have to go into the battle. I think there is a lot of flexibility that the game gives you, which we haven't really talked about. Like, I do think the game gives you multiple ways to play it, up to the noble battle where you're kind of forced to play it one way, and then back to like complete freedom again. Like, it really gives you I think that's the word I would use. It just gives you like flexibility. You can kind of like go at your own pace. If you just want to spend hours catching, you can do that. If you want to spend hours doing side missions, if you want to spend hours just exploring, if you want to reset for outbreaks, if you want to look for distortions, if you want to like farm materials, like, you can do so much, but it does require you to like make that game plan, which, again, not to compare to Breath of the Wild, but that was very much Breath of the Wild. You can either do the next mission, or you could walk in a direction and figure out what's there. You can do this puzzle, and you can do the next puzzle, and you can do the next puzzle, or you can look for Korok seeds, right? Like, there were so many different things to do. And I do think, like Breath of the Wild, the game, like in Breath of the Wild, if you never played it, you could, once you get out of the tutorial, you could go straight to Ganon's castle, and you could battle Ganondorf. You could skip the entire game. But the reason you could do that is because you were actually competent of how the game worked, you were good at the game, and you had the skill set to beat Ganondorf right out of the gate. And I think the alpha Pokemon are a really good sense of, or a really good comparison of that example in Breath of the Wild. I was able to catch a level 65, what was it? It was like a Ursa Ring. And I was only like level 35. But because I was like, I'm going to go into this, I'm going to agile style hypnosis. I'm going to send out this, which is I'm going to like strong style into that. I'm going to then use these poke, like, and I was able to catch it. So it does reward you. Like, I don't feel like, oh, I'm suddenly overpowered because now I have this Pokemon 30 levels over, because like I had the skill set to get it to begin with. If I have the skill set to get a Pokemon 30 levels above me, it's not the level that is the problem. Like, I have figured out the puzzle and I have the skills to go do it. So it's not like I'm getting gated by anything. So I really, really like that about the game. And I think they kind of started doing that with Sword and Shield of like, oh, look at these big, scary Pokemon. You shouldn't be able to fight them. But I think they do it really, really well here.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes like finding Pokemon just exciting. I think we're out of time though.
There's so much more to say.
I know. Will, give us our Pokemon of the week.
Well, we have two from the previous 2 weeks. So from 2 weeks ago, it was... Man, I hope I haven't lost track of time. I believe it's the one that is Unova, Pokemon Professor's friend. It's directly linked to the introduction of hidden abilities, and it could learn the move Dream Eater at 41, but now it's at 44 because of Fairy-type moves.
It's...
Sylveon.
Muna.
There was no Sylveon in Unova. It is Muna. Yes.
I haven't listened to the other one, so I don't know.
Because Muna was, she's not a professor, but she's the other, like, researcher, and she's researching dreams,
yeah.
And then she uses the mist from Muna to open up the dream world, and dream world is where you would first get Pokemon with hidden abilities.
Fennel is the one. Fennel.
It's like Dr. Fennel.
Yeah.
And next week?
All right, so then, well, no, so for last week, Greg didn't listen.
I have not listened, so.
Let me see if you can guess just from this clue, Greg. While this Pokemon is pretty much the opposite of the big fish Pokemon and it doesn't evolve, it does share a composite feature with a Pokemon introduced in the Hisui region.
Ooh, I actually think I know this.
Well, you better get it right because Greg hasn't had a week to think about it.
Is it Wishiwashi?
It is Wishiwashi.
Yeah, I was like, it sounds like Wishiwashi.
Because Big Fish Pokemon is Bascule Legion, which is made up of the souls of all of the ones that didn't survive. And Wishiwashi has the large form, which is made up of a bunch of tiny Wishiwashis put together. All right.
Muna Shuffle, great. Muna Shuffle, Shiny, also great.
What's next week?
All right, next week's. This Pokemon, whose pre-evolution had to be brought the farthest across the Poke-Earth to arrive in Hisui, has a new form that now has a type weakness to its compatriot that it originally was strong against.
Okay, that's our episode. We covered a lot and very little in 2 hours.
Yeah.
So hopefully you enjoyed it. Hey, if you're watching on YouTube, feel free to hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Leave a comment below of your favorite part of the game and your least favorite part of the game. That would be great. I would love to hear. I have heard from other people they don't like the noble stuff. I've heard from people they love the alpha stuff. That's how I feel. I've heard for some people that they are ignoring all the side missions. I heard some people love the story, some people are ignoring. I want to know what you think. So if you're watching on YouTube, leave that comment below. Your absolute favorite thing about the game, your least favorite thing about the game. Obviously, if you're a Patreon supporter or if you're in our Discord, we already get your opinions there. But we will have another episode midweek, probably talking about like middle impressions. I would consider this like first impressions of the game. And then we'll have a bonus episode for like middle impressions. And then probably next week we'll have a bonus episode for like final impressions. So instead of doing like 5 podcasts in a row, I think we're just going to do like 2 more like pretty meaty podcasts for y'all where it's like another 2-hour show. So you're just getting like bonus content this week. If you are a Patreon supporter, Irene has been playing through the game. So we're going to do a bonus Patreon episode with her. So you can hear her thoughts and stuff. So just me and her. It'll mostly be her sharing her thoughts on this kind of game compared to stuff. So that'll be bonus for patrons. I know we kind of missed a bonus episode this month, so we'll make it up with now that Legends out, we'll be able to make that up for going into February. So thank you to anyone who supports on Patreon. Will is at Washing the Sink. Greg is at The White Wing. I'm at Dragging a Lake. You can follow the
There's no the.
Oh, sorry. White Wing. Thy White Wing, as Arceus would say. We will be back later this week, and then we will be back next Monday. If you want to follow on socials, PKMNCST, pretty much on all socials. I will be streaming Monday, Tuesday on Twitch, taking off on Wednesday, and then we'll be back Thursday, Friday to do some more streaming. Hopefully I'll get this game done. I'm just having so much fun with it. So thank you for listening. We'll see you guys next week. This has been another episode of the Pokemon Podcast, and we are
super effective,
super hungry. We've been going long, and I haven't eaten breakfast yet.
This show is supported by Patreon. A shout out to all our producers who support our show at a high level, starting with Steven, Sean, Matthew, Bovine, Kay, Jessica, Jacob, Ryan, Evan, Ryan, Nate, Catherine, Casey, Josh, Smash, Gray, Dylan, Carlos, and Alvaro. And a huge shout out to our executive producers of Steph, Spencer, Courtney, and Brady. Thank you so much for your support. If you would like your name read at the end of the show, or you just want to support, it's super effective. You can head over to patreon.com/pkmncast or ise.cash in order to support the show if you want to. Otherwise, thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.